Happy Friday, everybody. We're almost there to the weekend. It's been quite a week. Welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make the Elm City tick. And we're doing that as usual on Friday today with the Pundit Friday crew here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe to run down the stories of the week. Pundits like Babs Roz Ivy, the very vegan goddess of our grassroots radio operation, the bell of our ball, the managing editor of the Inner City News and host of WNHH's daily 9 a.m. show, Love Babs, Love Talk. And I love Babs, and I love her talk. The publisher of La Voz Hispana, Nora Rodriguez Reyes, the bravest man in New Haven, WNHH station manager, Harry Dross.
Hey, Harry.
New Haven Independent Star reporter, Markeisha Ricks. I think there's somebody else on the panel, right? Is somebody else here in the studio today?
I'm allowed to catch you now.
Okay. It might be the plow driver of peace, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance, the optimizer of opulence and opportunity, the undertaker of unfiltered utterance. He's the erudite earl of ergonomics, the liberated lion of lucidity, the maniacal monarch of mercy, the blistering barbecue of brain-dead bozos, our executioner of existential enemies, the alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the zealous zapper of xenophobia, the sagacious sergeant sultan of swing, the quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, the grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, our prize protector against pusillanimity, the distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente, king of conspiracy concoction, deacon of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses, the shaman of the shoreline, the potentate of 360 state, the recognized ringleader of risque repartee, the eighth wonder of the world, wizard of wise guy waggery, the capo of casual conversation, the first name in flame, the daring don of dope deliberation, the sultan of spit, the West Indian whisperer of wonk, the emperor of explosive exposition, the esteemed elucidator of ebonics, type tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, the dap-toned deliverer of decency, maximal medium maestro, bodacious bold-faced barista bop, chess master at chill, primo practitioner of pop prestidigitation, the beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of hip-hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning raconteur of riffitude, sanctified sayer of the slow-witted, the never-late-for-supper decorated, dazzling, and indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximum mythologist Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show. In the morning here on Pundit
Friday. Don't hate.
That just feels like, you know, when you go to the movies and you have all these
commercials. These previews, like 20 minutes of previews before the movie starts, so it gives you 20 minutes to, you know.
We ask you to put down your cell phone and buy every product that's paid us to try to subliminally plant in your brain. Like that kind of thing.
Get a WNHH onesie. Thank you. In advance.
Well, some people are snuggled at home wearing those onesies this week because it was snow. Yeah. It wasn't the blizzard said we get. At the last minute, the storm moved west. We were all shut down. There was
people
a travel ban.
People sounded so disappointed by that.
But you know what's kind of odd about
wrong
it?
With
so
people.
We didn't get to say 20 inches. We had 10 inches. Other places had 20.
Yeah.
But so on that hand, it said, oh, gee,
only men were
deal.
Saying that.
But at the same time, part of the reason we got only 10,
yeah.
was that it turned to rain in the middle.
Right.
So it got really heavy. They called it mashed potatoes.
Mm.
And then it got so cold and stayed cold that it all turned to ice, huge chunks of ice. One person was telling me from Parks and Rec where three of their four machines to clear sidewalks broke overnight and had to be fixed, that this is harder than having 20 inches of snow.
Yes.
I think it's different. I mean, it's harder to get. So even when you clear the streets, it's clear. It's not clear. You still got that ice. I know when I was walking back and forth, I was in Wheelie Avenue because you just couldn't do sidewalks even when people blew them. I mean, how do you guys think the city did? I know that we heard a lot that in the small, narrow side streets, people did follow the parking ban, they did tag and tow, and they were able to get a lot of side streets they didn't get last time, but there were still some, especially in New Hallville, that were plowed in.
The sense that the city did a pretty good job. I'm more disappointed in individual neighbors. I was walking in East Rock. I walked all the way from Wilbur Cross to downtown yesterday. Mm. And when I tell you there's a block across from New Haven Academy on Orange Street where nobody plowed, like one person like completely did their sidewalk.
Yeah.
The rest was just ice and slush. And you're like, nobody even came and did that sweep that leaves that slick ice behind.
Right.
Nothing.
Was that the block that goes to Trumbull?
It's just the block just after Trumbull, but it is in that same section. I was like,
where all those old mansions are, they're now institutional uses, like the High Society and doctors. Yeah.
So I and then I've seen patches. I saw patches like that because I was, you know, all over East Rock in the direction that I came into East Rock. That was the way I came back yesterday. But I was walking around the neighborhood, and there are some people who you can tell. And I think that gives us two categories of people, right? People who care about others and people who don't. And I'm like, and you'll see people who did that first sweep. Yeah. Like, they're like, okay, I got this first week, but never came back, never did anything. So that cement that you're talking about, like, is a ice skating ring for two blocks. And then, like, you get back to a place where people have cleared the sidewalk. And then you have corners. People are on the corners, are responsible for their corners. But their corners are piled so high that they're like, well, if they're just going to keep pushing it back, I'm not coming out here anymore.
They did do a good job picking up the, I'm all the way in. Am I up?
Oh, you know what? You got the spook
mic
microphone. Harry says it does come out well over the air. We just can't hear it here. Right. So if you can't hear Joe Ugly, call us in.
There you go. They're like, mm-mm. No, but I give the city props, man. They did do a good job picking up the snow, at least in the downtown area. So shout out.
You know what?
Hey, I don't leave downtown.
Okay, George Jefferson.
You know, Harry drove our station. Oh, yeah, Norma, what were you saying?
But the crosswalks for people to cross,
right?
They haven't been cleaned. The other thing is, right now, when you leave somebody in the middle of the street, there's no entrance
That's my peeve right there.
So they
there.
Have to go all the way. And then I've also been told that when compare New Haven to other cities in cleaning, New Haven hasn't really done a good job at all.
Well, let's actually...
Hartford, from what I understand, Hartford is a mess.
Well, we have a first-person account here. It's Harry Jost, our fearless station manager, who admits to being a Donald Trump fan in this very studio and in this very city, which immediately qualifies him for a Profile and Courage Award. Harry lives in Waterbury, even though he lived for many years in New Haven, and he commutes here in New Haven every day. He made it in here the second day. Harry, how did Waterbury compare to New Haven?
Oh my God! I don't want to criticize New Haven so bad, but it's horrible over here.
In New Haven versus Waterbury.
Waterbury
got a lot of hills. It just melted. Come on, man.
No. That's the point.
That's a great theory. So is there a theory of science that hills generate heat that melt the snow? You heard it first here. Not only conspiracy theories, but scientific.
Because we are pro science here.
There you go. Another title for Joe the physicist. But even that actually tells it all. We have hills and everything. Mm-hmm. I live on the top of a hill, side street, and unless they would have plowed that, I would have never made it to work. Waterbury plowed all of those side streets over
what
here.
What kind of parking rules do they put into effect in Waterbury when it snows? Is it just like ours, or where they...
To be honest with you, I only watch New Haven news.
What about...
I don't know.
Do they have a lot of
Harry lives in a condo, so they have their own kind of parking rules and their own people to get out. Because a lot of things people bring it up, there's no question the city's involved in how they plow, but they... And as Markeisha pointed out, a lot of it's citizens. So Nora brought up sidewalks. Mm-hmm. Actually, the city's not responsible for most sidewalks. The Downtown Special Service District works on downtown sidewalks. Mm-hmm. There are issues when plows might plow in a sidewalk. The snow has to go somewhere. But then other places, the city does have responsibility alongside parks and the green. So it is a mix. At each place, you got to look. On Broadway, I think that's Yale that's supposed to clear that. And actually, I think they do okay.
I really meant the crosswalks.
Yeah.
Where people cross. You know, when you're crossing, where the pedestrians cross.
Yeah.
Some of those crosswalks haven't been cleaned.
You're no longer in New York. You could cross in the middle of the streets down here. You don't got to go to the corner.
Officer Joe.
Yeah, but then there's no entrance. Safety first. But like you said, there's no entrance. I know that's a big problem on my street. I live on Alden Avenue in Westville. And like people did. I'm fancy.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. But like there are lots of, and this was the same was true in East Rock yesterday, that people would clear to, like, so I'm confused about who's responsible for the corners. Because I thought that if you have property on the corner, you're responsible for the corner. Now, obviously, you're contending with the plows that are pushing snow to your corner. So it's going to build up.
Right.
But are you responsible for digging out the cement at the corner so people can get through the cross section?
But when who's responsible? When you open up the schools And then you have the children
standing in the street, standing in the middle
of the street waiting for the bus.
That's a problem.
It's the city's responsibility to go and
do that. That makes sense. And look, I suggested the last snowfall that we had, what they should do is just have those dump trucks at the end of the street while the storm is on, you know? Pick it up, and the more you get out of the way, faster, you know. But, you know, I'm eating into someone's overtime, but that's another story.
But now we did have people working 16-hour days, 8-hour sleep, come back 16. We had 65 trucks out. Harry talks about those crosswalks. It's a big deal. And, you know, I think if you're in a wheelchair, forget it.
Or
a
walker.
But 320 miles of streets, is it realistic that the city government can get to each of those, not the crosswalks, I'm sorry, the corner there? That is a big deal, the corner. But I do think that because property owners are responsible for those sidewalks, I do think that it's up to the citizens to do their part too.
No, but you know, citizens do their part, but here, look, there are ends to this thing. And this is why I was asking earlier about the parking, the rules to dealing with snow and snow removal. In New Haven, for example, you have people who have they plow out their driveways and push it out to the street. A truck come back, pushes it right back.
I know, and that's obviously the hardest part. And with this kind of ice, you got a wall.
Exactly, and then all of a sudden you got this
ice.
But what can
the truck do? They say they feel really bad about that, but they can't go to everyone's driveway and then...
No. If they pick up first, you know, if they pick this stuff up faster, I'm telling you.
Joe, they had everybody out around the clock. It's 65 plows. There are 320 miles.
It's not big government. It's efficient government.
But Joe, do you think they can get to every street in the first pass? They go on the main streets.
No,
Joe's point, like, even if they didn't pick it up right, like, during the storm, but, like, at some point, like, so downtown gets picked up. The snow gets picked up and removed.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like the neighborhoods get that same treatment at any point.
Like, right now, downtown is clear.
Yeah. Like downtown's clear, but Westville and East Rock.
Now, don't forget, there's a downtown special services district that has a lot to do with those mounds.
Okay,
but they do say emergency routes first because they want to make sure people live.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, like, I live even on Central Avenue where I live. Mm-hmm. It's not the main thoroughfare, Whaley and Edgewood is, but it's not a small side street. It's a very heavily charged street. So they get to us the first 6 hours, and it's completely clear.
Is that the trick to it? We all got to live on the street.
Denser development.
Marquesa's got a real point in New Hallville. Yeah. So I know that's off Shelton. We're looking at Delphine, the older woman there, Delphine Clyburn. A real tough time. These old people can get out. They parked on the correct side of the street, and then the wall of snow is there. And then there's a volunteer association, Interfaith Volunteers, and we put their number in the Independent. Where you can call them up and they'll help dig you out. On a much smaller scale, these people call themselves Yetis, you know, through C-Click Fix. They go to people's houses. I think we need to pull together in a storm. And I do think that spirit's there in the city. We have a storm. I actually love it because the city's more peaceful. And we do help each other, and we spend a couple of days not fighting. But it's a lot required. It's a big job. So what I'd just like to know more about is Harry's point about Waterbury. Waterbury's not known as a paragon of efficient government. If they do a better job of the streets, I am curious about why.
Nobody's going anywhere in Waterbury, so they're going to talk about it.
But you know what they could be doing? They could be sitting back listening to Pundit Friday at WNHH Radio. New Haven's home for community radio broadcast at 103.5 FM and live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. It's Pundit Friday with Joe Ugly, Babs Rawls Ivy, Marquesa Ricks, Norma Rodriguez Reyes, and the bravest man in New Haven, even if he does come in from Waterbury these days, Harry Dross. Folks, last night, Marquesa Ricks was covering a budget hearing along with Tom Breen from the Independent. This is the time when all the departments of the city come and make their case for why they should get the budget they're asking for to the Board of Alders, which then has to approve it or not approve it. And she was watching the Register of Voters last night. And there have been a lot of problems with that office. Matter of fact, they completely botched last fall's presidential election. People waiting for hours.
I'm sorry, they have one job.
And you know, people waiting for hours and
it's a big one.
People want to volunteer, not even being tapped into volunteer to run the polls. And people not showing up to run the polls. And it took them more than a week to get results when most places had it an hour or two. You want to talk about the way different places work. That was actually, I think that's borderline criminal. And yet, the Democratic Party of New Haven does get to pick who the registrar is because we have this bizarre state law that you have to elect this registrar of voters, but your candidate can't lose. If the Democratic Republican candidates get fewer votes than somebody else, then we have three. We pay to have three people in the job so that the Democrat Republican can get their people in. That's a side note. So we have this person that the Democratic Town Committee put in the job who can't do it. And then she's come to give her budget last night. And then they were asking, she had a surplus, right? $200,000, even while they weren't running the office. Where was that? Why was that surplus there, Marquesa?
So she has a projected surplus through through the current budget, right? So through the last financial report from Joe Clerkin's office, Joe is the city budget director, shows that she has a surplus. She's running a surplus up through at least January. So as far as he knows, that money hasn't gone anywhere. So she should still be running a surplus. But the question is why? And nobody knows at this point why, given that we just had
but she was there last night hearing, election, right?
She was there last night.
So she was there. So did they ask her, what's this $200,000?
They did ask her, and it kind of came out of the blue. Her answer is, I don't have that information.
Right? Well, boy, I'd love to know where $200,000 were lying around here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, did they say it's okay? You don't need to know when we give you money.
They didn't say that. Like, it's the finance committee. They didn't say that, but they didn't hammer her. They didn't say, how is it possible? Because what she's in her budget for the coming fiscal year, she's asking for essentially the same amount of money plus about $20,000 additional dollars. And she's setting aside in that same budget about $200,000 for hiring more poll workers for the upcoming municipal elections. But the question is, how do you need $200,000 if you didn't spend $200,000 last time?
Well, no. Here's how. First of all, let's not act like she
and ran. It was a bigger election.
What about raises, Marquisha? Let's not act like it There's ran no money there for raises?
No, it's not line item for raises.
Okay.
It's not like in the last election was running, like clockwork. It was a mess. So that's why there's a surplus. She didn't have enough people that was needed. That's the problem. And she just needed to come out and say, hey, you know what? I understaffed. And now this time I know I got to go in there and put that money towards the people.
And I think that's the bigger question. Does mm-hmm. she know that? Like, have you done the analysis?
Can she manage it? When hundreds of people said, we want to volunteer, and she has them sign up on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. can she manage that kind of operation?
It seems like there isn't an apparatus in place, right? Like, mm-hmm. and this is, I think it's a good argument for a professionalized, like, election center, if you will. I've lived in cities that have election centers where they
have. So would that include clerk and registrar?
Actually, like, they don't have those titles. You have, like, an elections director, like, In one particular city that I'm thinking of, they have a probate judge who is technically the elected official mm-hmm. Over the office, but there's a professional staff. There's an election director. There's an assistant director. There's somebody who's in charge of voter engagement. And then there's somebody who's in charge of training.
So here, that would be the person who sends the postcards to people tell you to vote.
Exactly.
At the wrong
and there'd be
place.
Somebody specifically mm-hmm. in charge of training staff. And here training volunteers.
Here we engage
volunteers.
Everybody. We send them postcards say, come to Sheridan School. But in fact, you can't vote at Sheridan School. That kind of thing.
So somebody who's, and this would, you know, the argument would be that this would be a consistent staff that's dedicated just to the process of voting.
Now, well, that's interesting to me about whether you combine it, because people always confused, why is it the registrar of voters that counts the votes on election night, or in the case of New Haven, fails to count the votes on election night and certifies it to the state, but it's the city clerk that handles the absentee ballot votes. And then it gets sent over. I mean, it's a very confusing process, I guess, from our charter.
You know, the charter works with whom got to get it. Yeah. Right. Got to get the best favor going for back in the day. You know?
And I think the challenge, too, if it is going to, and nobody's talking about it not being an elected position, but if it is, like, parties have to be, in my mind, better about running people who actually want that job and know how to do it. Like
the real thing. That's
the challenge. She seems very inexperienced at this
right.
job.
All jokes aside, you're running a $200,000 surplus on office that small. That's a management issue. That's if the person could really handle it.
What I did notice that was interesting is that between fiscal 14-15 and fiscal 15-16, which we're in now, that the Board of Alders approved a very big bump, like basically a $200,000 bump in that budget. They went from about $600,000-something in 14-15 to over $800,000-something in that budget. So, like,
so again, the money wasn't put to use.
And I don't know if it just got lost in the sauce. I don't know why they approved that. I don't know why they approved that increase in the first place. So, what did they think was gonna happen, or what were they told was gonna happen? And that actually might precede her tenure. That's the issue.
You just raised a good point. You know, you said, was it asked for? You don't know. But then why did she ask? Did I hear you say earlier that she asked for $20,000 more? Well, obviously, she don't know what to do with $200 yet. So what's the need for an extra $20? It's like a fuzzy math. I'm lost.
See, I think we would say, I see how hard they worked in that office. And the state has rules that are ridiculous. We have to cut up these wards into different state voting districts that don't match up. so that people vote, do have to vote different places in different elections, is why they screw up the postcards. And they have to hire in the same place, like troop school, depending on the election. They have to call it two or three different voting places because different state rep districts are within that ward. Oh. And you have to hire a whole team of people to check IDs, to monitor the polling place. And there might be hours where only two people walk in. I bring up troop because that's the one I happen to check my way in. I see this. I'm always amazed. And then they tell me about other ones. I mean, forget Truman School. Truman School, on certain elections, like when there isn't a president running, you might get 30 or 40 people vote. You have to have two or three voting places there. Career has three. Career High School has three within that ward, three polling station, has three different polling places in some elections where you have to have crews of three or four people hired for each of them to count maybe 50 votes over 8 hours and work like 10 to 12, I mean, sorry, to work 14 hours on the shift and then an hour on either end. That's crazy. So mm-hmm. I do sympathize. Over the years, I've really watched how hard they work at the Register of Voters, the Rest of Us, but that makes it doubly important to not have the Democratic Party take so lightly the whom they put in that position to run it.
That's my position, too, because all that other stuff is just whatever. That's par for the course, right? Like, you know, you have to have these, you know, everybody has, you know, these places where there's three and four different polling places.
We should
places.
Have only, instead of 40, we should have like 10. We have 30 wards, sometimes 40 polling stations. On certain elections where not a lot of people vote, especially some of the statewide elections, but aren't where you aren't running for mayor or governor.
I mean, that doesn't
bother
me
as much. That's
like we should
have 10 total.
That doesn't bother me as much as having somebody who can oversee whatever this crazy process is and do it with enough sort of sophistication that it's seamless, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what we want. We want it to be seamless. And it's not. So, you know.
For me, it's just, you know, waste. Bureaucracy. Democratic waste.
You know,
wait, you can't say Democratic ways, Harry, when they created all these voting districts, because that's a state, that's a Republican state of conspiracy at the state level. And it's the two parties are in that together. And you can't, we've had Republican governors or independent Republican governors we had them for four straight terms that went 16 years, Harry. I mean, to say that it's all because of Democrats that they waste the money to create all these districts we don't need, I think that's a real kind of Fox News, this cheap shot.
Fox News cheap shot. No, it's just the redundancy that happens within the Democratic Party. You have to recreate the wheel, and in recreating the wheel, you create different departments to run that wheel.
Again, Harry, again, cheap shot. No one in the Democratic Party, Republicans, both of which have run for hundreds of years, city halls in New Haven. This goes back to the New Haven charter that we have elected town clerks and elected Register voters. I think you and I would probably agree it's kind of crazy we do all those offices, and that they're elected instead of professionalized. But why would it be Democratic faults if the Puritans or the government that set up, if they put that in the charter?
Yeah, let's blame the Puritans. No, for me, it's just the way the budget works, especially here in New Haven.
Not Waterbury.
In New Haven, is we never want to eliminate anything that isn't working or move the funds somewhere. No, we got to figure out a way to spend our whole budget. This way we get more money the next time.
And is that why we cut the public works budget by about a half over the last 10 years, as well as the library budget, while increasing hours and increasing the work they do?
That's a good job. Let's do it for the rest of the government.
I will say it would be nice to see in that position somebody who, if not capable of analyzing the what happened in the last elections or in previous elections, but being able to determine trends. You know, what's been happening in elections, right. We right. know, and like pretty much that the trend has been an increased interest in voting.
Right.
I'm interested in how we help people vote better, but how do we help people vote more efficiently? And how do you spend that money that you do have? Like, you should know why you have a $200,000 surplus. Maybe the bills just haven't come in. Like, that's totally possible.
Mm. No, but my question is, what is who does it serve to have people who are ineffective in their jobs to do this work?
Do you politically paying back political favors that help people support your candidates when it's
exactly
time for running, for, running
exactly.
for office?
Okay.
Exactly.
So that's in a nutshell, we don't really care about.
What I care about is that you're listening to Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio, New Haven's home for community radio, broadcast at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenbend.org. Running down the headlines with the best pundit crew in the business, Joe Ugly, Marquisha, Ricks, Babzerels, Ivy, Norm Rodriguez Reyes, and Harry Droz. And I'm your host, Paul Bass. Harry does have a point sometimes. I happen to personally agree. about Democrats wasting
That's
money.
That's like Spicer saying, well, you're not intelligent.
Actually, I would argue that Harry is right at least as often as I am. I don't know if that means he's right a lot, but one thing he'd bring up about it's up to Republicans now at the state capitol to talk about corporate welfare, and that cracks me up. So Themis Clarides, right? She's number two in the House in Hartford. She's state rep, and she pointed out this week Alexion Pharmaceuticals in New Haven. They announced they're laying off 210 people. Now only about half of them or less are going to be in New Haven. They're worldwide, right? So they had gotten from the Malloy administration a program called First Five, where we pay companies not to leave the state or leave or to not to leave the state, to stay put or to come here. And, you know, but just to be fair, people like Clarities were all hard on the governor when GE left for their office for a reason that had nothing to do with the state, and they didn't think he gave him enough corporate welfare. But in this case, he's got a point. We gave $51 million to Alexion to move from Cheshire to New Haven. Uh-huh. Now New Haven made out, because this is a lot. We got a lot of money from Alexion. That's one reason taxes aren't going up this year. And it's a 13-story office tower that they call 14 because they're superstitious. You can't have a floor called 13. Right. That big glass tower on College Street, 100 College Street. And they said, well, I'll tell you what. If you do that, we'll create, although this word create I discovered this week is really a funny word. We're gonna create or retain 686 jobs for 5 years. So they've been open a year. Retain. So one thing they could do is Alexion was born in Science Park, which got a lot of government money to nurture companies. As soon as they started hiring people, they went to Cheshire, where the land's cheaper and they like working there better. And then they said, hey, we might leave the state, Jack, which is true because the state's going to erase the bottom and try to lure corporations with corporate welfare, because then if the politicians who don't keep them, then they get blasted for not keeping them there. And then they get blasted if they don't, they pay too much. So we had this First Five program. They said, I'll tell you what, give us this $51 million. We'll come to New Haven, build a big tower. Everyone's happy. And then they hired or retained more jobs than they said they would. Within a year, they had 827 instead of 686. That's pretty good, right? But now they're laying off 210. So Themis Clarities said, let's stop this First Five program. Let's stop the corporate welfare until we take a look at this and see where it's going. While I would argue, I don't know if Harry would agree with me, that it's a little hypocritical that the same Republicans said you didn't give enough corporate welfare to General Electric to keep corporate offices here, that they wanted to move to Boston because they wanted to be around the tech centers. I think the Republicans have a good point on this. And I think it might be time to point, but what do you guys think?
Well, Alexion right now, their rep is not that good. I mean, just
because they have an investigation to where they deceptive marketing practices and the CEO had to resign. They've had a lot of, they've been busy since they got here.
So, but that building is really nice though.
So when you start from that level.
Hopefully we're not headed for a beautiful empty building. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, Arts and Ideas is having their big reception, laying out the thing there next week.
Well, you know, I'm not worried about if that building in particular will ever go empty. I would never worry about that because it's too close to the hospital. They could do a lot with that building.
People probably didn't think Winchester was going to be empty.
Section 8.
No, but.
Did you say Section 8 housing? You know what? I like that building.
That would be a beautiful.
Ooh, I might get my
We're
loan.
Moving on up.
Am I low income? I mean, I like a view.
Now my question is, when you say that the state gave them $50 million, does that mean that they got to pay less taxes, $51 million? Dollars and less taxes?
I don't have the details broken down here, but I believe it's usually a combination of tax credits and grants. Right.
Okay. Now, the tax credits is saying you get to keep more of your money.
Okay,
Not that we're giving you anything. You get to keep more of your money. So you get to create jobs, mm-hmm. right? And those jobs, those workers actually pay taxes themselves, so they pay into the system.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, you're buying these kind of BS studies that say there's a multiplier effect that if you spend $1 million to create 10 jobs, we'll get $5 million back because they'll go to the dry cleaners? Because think about it, $51 million for 210 jobs, that's a lot of money per job.
Yeah, it is.
I could just hire those people for a lot less, and they could still live in the new Section 8 tower at 100 College.
See, I'm going to believe Obama.
Obama said, I don't live here anymore. You can't blame me for nothing.
I'm going to believe Obama when
he
said
he's not the president
his
anymore.
Stimulus package,
although we wish he was,
saved about 10 million jobs just because his stimulus. Now, he said it either created or saved the jobs. Now, it's the same thing as retaining and creating.
No.
It's the same thing.
Pause, freeze frame.
Of course, you don't get to say that you're either creating or saving jobs when you can't really actually count those jobs as saved. Who decides you save the job?
Okay, can you know who decides? Those corporations you love to get paid corporate welfare to create jobs and supposedly have a multiplier effect. They're the ones who can always say we're taking away all these jobs unless you politicians who we give campaign contributions to give us corporate welfare to keep them.
There was a combination of both, Harry. He did save and he did create. What he did do was he saved the auto industry from going under, from going belly up. And then from that, all the subcontractors they created different jobs, i.e. there were companies, I know one company in particular, who was able to get a contract from the big three just on the hose, the rubber hosing for that, so he was able to bring more people in. That's
Thank
creating
you, Joe.
Jobs.
That's what I said. I was believing the president.
Okay, but then your side, Harry, then agrees that government shouldn't, quote, pick winners.
Yeah.
They shouldn't artificially enter the competitive marketplace by giving money to help some industries succeed. Of course, you say that not when it comes to car owners, it comes to green industry tax credits. So they're taking away tax credits. New Haven yesterday, Lucy Gelman, our reporter, was going down the waterfront. I never knew there's this biodiesel company on the waterfront that does tens of millions of gallons a year. They convert animal as well as plant waste into biodiesel fuel. Ooh. And they ship it around. And because President Trump wants to get rid of their green their regulation standards of people having to use this stuff and the kind of tax credits, not give them money, they now face the possibility of not only losing those jobs, but not helping combat climate change. I guess when it comes to those industries, we don't like this whole multiplier effect and all that stuff, right?
You know,
we're not giving the money, right? We could give them the tax credit, but not give them money because Obama gave a lot of people money during his stimulus.
Earned income tax credit was really another way to help poor people not to have more money in their pocket. Oh, it's different when it's a tax credit for poor people. And is that okay or not?
The poor, Paul?
No, I don't. I'm for the earned income tax credit. I'm for the earned income tax credit because of the crazy way we debate issues in America now. You can't help poor people not starve by giving them money for the food. You have to just give them a tax refund that they otherwise wouldn't get, and that's how Bill Clinton did it.
I'm glad I changed your mind on that. You want to save the poor people now.
What?
What is happening?
No, I don't want to steal from the poor people to enrich the Republican donors and the Democratic donors. But I don't know. I guess what we could all agree on is you're listening to Dateline New Haven, WNSS Radio. New Haven, Song for Community Radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenpin.org, broadcast at 103.5 FM. Hey, you know what I'm glad? I'm glad I don't work in a high school. Even though great things happen in a high school, have you ever noticed when you walk in at our age what sexualized environments high schools are? I mean, so many people going through puberty and so many of them in close quarters, and you always read about these terrible things that happen, you know, with adults acting inappropriately. Last night, it was the Board of Police Commissioners, and they announced that there was a school resource officer, that's a fancy name for cop assigned to a school. There's a guy who actually, we wrote a story about a bunch of years ago, who would lecture the kids at New Horizons.
Can't touch girls' butts.
Don't touch girls' butts. He had an article about that, and the boys got to keep
their
distance.
And I just meant y'all. Y'all shouldn't touch girls' butts.
So this actually school resource officer took it on himself. Mm-hmm. We were there, we did it, to lecture the kids about respecting each other's bodies and not bothering them. And then it turned out there was a complaint the police got that he was harassing this one girl, asking her to go out with him off the premises, sending social media messages, including stuff people could read. She said staring right down at her body and acting uncomfortably, making her feel uncomfortable. And the Internal Affairs Department, which is not often in the police department, rule against the cops. They ruled that this was all correct. And the police chief gave him a 10-day suspension, and they said he can no longer work in a school. Our readers are already saying, holy cow, why is he allowed to work at all as a cop if he did that? What do you guys think? Is that being too rough?
He should be fired.
You think he should be fired? Now, we don't know enough yet. They haven't released yet the details of what he exactly did.
The fact that they have enough to say, okay, yeah, this did happen.
They said two violations, conduct of becoming an officer and violation of the city computer policy.
Well, first they got to remove him. Like, you know, that enough, you know, they have to remove him, I get, you know, from the premises. That's the first thing. But let's wait for the investigation to come back. And I'm telling you right now.
They didn't release the details yet. We don't know exactly everything he did. So last night at the meeting, they orally said, What he did was he was standing too close and looking at her, posting messages on social media, asking her to meet her outside the building. So they said that was a violation of the use of school computers.
So now if her father would have rolled up on him and beat the crap out of him, her father would have went to jail.
Right.
For beating up a cop. Because that's what would have happened.
No, there's a problem there. There's strongly abuse of power in so many different levels, you know. So
I'm just thinking about this young girl, right? Because she did the right thing by telling someone.
Right.
And I don't know if she feels like she's gotten some justice. So he gets moved somewhere else.
No.
He gets moved somewhere else.
Well, in the words of our president, you're fired. That's what should happen to him.
Can we say that to the president?
To the president, you have to actually elect another president.
No, you don't. No, you don't. One could step in.
I don't believe we elected Gerald Ford, did we?
No, we Gerald Ford.
And I don't
want to
be not electing Michael Pence either.
That's true. No, that's the worst one we want in. But Ford was never elected as president. He was moved. No, he was never elected.
He was elected vice president.
Yeah.
But you know, there are a bunch of cops this week who actually.
He wasn't elected vice president either.
That's right.
Sparrow Agnew was removed. Yeah. Ford came in. Nixon was kicked out. Ford bumped
up. Good point.
Okay.
I like that.
That's three for Joe Ugly.
Yeah.
So back to this story.
Yeah.
So, you know, my concern is always with the survivor of these kinds of things and mm-hmm. what that will mean to her. You know, I mean, kids have it tough enough, right? So to have someone in authority. Now, what if they didn't believe her? Like, what if what? You know, usually these things are never believed. And usually authority figures get the benefit of the doubt over children's stories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what happens to this girl? Like, what happens to her?
That's a good question.
You know, and it's
hard for life.
Exactly.
You know, got to worry about, I mean, I was a kid like that. Men looking at you in a way that's inappropriate and you know it's inappropriate and they know it's inappropriate. You know, what does that do for a girl?
And then if he's the patrol officer in her neighborhood.
Right, exactly.
And even under a 10-day suspension, like, what does that mean? Like, he was posting things on Facebook, apparently, so...
That alone is enough for me. He has to go.
Are you going to still be posting stuff? Are you still... Now you're not at work, so now you have free time on your hands. I don't understand.
I thought there was a policy... Okay, I might be wrong, but I thought there was a policy within our school...
City use of school computers. That was one of the two grounds on which they suspended him. One was conduct on becoming an officer, which is violating a police general order, and the other part was a city policy about misuse of city computers, sexually harass or personal use.
I have an after school program, and I don't even like being in the room just one on one talking with someone. Put an adult in there if I can't have an adult in there with a female.
I mean, we have a safe policy at my church that no adult is alone with any child themselves. Right. That there's always at least two or three adults.
See,
children.
My thing is if you wouldn't be hired with this on your record, you shouldn't stay on the job with this on your record.
That's a good point. Good point.
Well, we have to find out more what the details were. You know, I remember when I for a while taught college courses and I had an office, I would never meet with students, especially female students, in the closed door office. I know that wasn't necessary, but I would actually go to the common room.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know why. I wanted them to feel comfortable, even though I don't think they had a problem with it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted there not to be any, you know. But when I walk into a high school, it always strikes me. Am I wrong about this? Am I just kind of nutty?
No, there's all this sexual energy.
The high school I went to, Horace Mann in New York, it became, no, I knew it at the time. It used to be all boys, then it went to co-ed. But they had a tradition of these men who were raping the boys all the time. And, you know, years later, it came out on the front page of the New York Times, New York Girls stuff, and there's a lot of people I knew. But there is this sexual energy, and you know, teenagers are just going through such incredible hormonal disruption and getting into their feeling into their bodies and all these new sexual urges. And then you have adults in that environment who obviously they're human beings too, and some of them are pretty horrible. We read about the woman in Madison.
You know what? We've already known what this is because, you know, there's rules on college campuses that professors cannot date students, right? So we have that. You know, we have rules in prisons. And prisons is another place where these inequitable relationships happen, right? Where, you know, men guarding women and women guarding men and things happen and they shouldn't happen. And, you know, this imbalance of power. So, I mean, I think we just have to be more mindful. And we know how to do this.
if you have security at your school, they are not to be alone with students ever. That there has to be a tag team kind of thing.
I think adults just got to use their doggone head. I mean, you're wrong a kid. Like you said, Paul, you know, you wouldn't go into a room when you were back in college to interview.
No, I'm talking recently when I was teaching college.
Oh, okay. But you still wouldn't go into a room with a female by yourself. You do it in a common area. I mean, I just call that just, you know.
I just think about that girl. I just think about her and not knowing how to get that away from her, like not knowing how to maneuver those waters when somebody's pressing up against you, you know, and kind of forcing their way at you. And you're a kid and you don't know the norms or how to flow through those waters. Do you know what I mean? You might be flattered, but then after a while it gets to feel, ooh, this is uncomfortable. Like he wants me to meet him after school. Like, what? You know, that kind of thing.
Can I tell you something good the cops did this week?
Yeah.
They found a McDonald's coffee cup. Actually, a teacup. McDonald's tea, sweet tea on the street on Osborne Avenue. Thanks to seeing that at like 4 in the morning and realizing it was 20 or 30 feet away from where there had been a crash and a driver had crashed into a motorcyclist and killed him back in October. Someone that actually has some connection to the people here at WNHH, this photography artist, great guy. Because of that coffee cup, they were able to find the hit-and-run driver. I hadn't realized that only 25% approximately of hit-and-run cases are solved because it's so hard to get good evidence. So they get to the scene at 2 in the morning, and there's a little piece of what might have been the car there from the side, but then they know it's a Honda. They say, so many Hondas, you know? And there was some eyewitness, but they said a silver car. So silver Honda, that's a beginning. They could put out a flyer, hey, anyone see a silver Honda? But then as they do this thing called a line walk or something, which I never knew about this. They get the five cops who are on the accident reconstruction team, and they walk down the block side by side to see what they can see. There's this one officer, Robert DuPont, who had already worked a double shift that day. He was actually a motorcycle cop. He loves motorcycles. He had worked the morning shift, and he worked crowd control at the bars. He's leaving, heading home, and say, got to come back. There's this accident. He notices, not where the crash was, the block down, driving down the next block. Hey, that coffee cup's there, and they just paved the street. There's not other debris. He bends down and smells it. Oh, I smell it. Kind of smells like sweet tea. He looks at the liquid. The liquid's still kind of warm. He said, ooh, this might be something. People said, yeah, I mean, long shot, this might be something. Now, they knew the car was coming from the west toward the east because there are two McDonald's. It's from McDonald's, and there's also barbecue sauce. There are two There are two McDonald's in either direction. They went to the one as if you were coming from the east up near Dayton Street. They had great video there.
Oh,
a few minutes before that, they show a silver Honda coming. They show the cashier handing the sweet tea and the barbecue sauce with chicken McNuggets to the driver who hands it to the passenger. And they then get a warrant, and they got the credit card that was used. They go to the credit union, they get the address, and they found them.
And this is like New Haven CSI.
Yeah. Now what I love about CSIs, we had this story last October and November. They asked us not to run it because they had to make the arrest first, even though the person had confessed. And they didn't know what to charge him with because then they have to do what they don't show in the CSI shows that take forever and months. They had to then go back and get other video from Tsinghua Restaurant in the other direction just to show how fast, to calculate how fast the motorcycle was coming from the other end to see if it was his fault. And they show he's going kind of fast, but it wasn't his fault. But they show in the video how far he traveled over one amount of time and then reconstructed that way. They had to go to the mechanic to look at the vehicles, both vehicles, to see if there are other mechanical functions that might have been the reason the crash happened. There weren't. Then they had to wait for a toxicology report to see if the motorcyclist was driving under the influence. That took 3 months. They're so backlogged there, and that's actually average, I believe.
They got to get to this.
So it turns out he was not drunk. So you had this guy. You had this guy who confessed, and he's still out there driving, hasn't been charging anything, and they're doing the best they can. And then when they want the warrant, so in January you get the toxicology, then you got to write up the warrant. You got a lot of other cases, and then you got to get a prosecutor to approve it and a judge to sign it and then someone to serve it. So it actually took until the end of February to serve this thing. So the guy wasn't going anywhere, but he was still driving around. I'm guessing he's going to be a little more careful now to kill somebody. But they were able to make the case that it was negligent homicide and that he was at fault in terms of how he turned. And that was my hat's off to Rosedale, Robert DuPont, Paul Finch, Robbie. Sergeant Mikowski. Yeah, they really did a great job on this one.
Yeah, that was really great work. But I wonder the mindset of the guy still driving around knowing that he killed someone.
I'm out of jail for Christmas, man.
Well, first thing he said to them was, I heard a pop, but I figured it hit something. Then he said, actually, I kind of knew something was serious because that's why I didn't come in. Like, and then I saw on TV someone was died, you know, someone killed. I was planning to come in.
Wow.
So
good job by the cops.
Good job by the cops.
You know what?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I know a couple of people.
Norma, can
that
you get it?
I know a couple of people that actually killed someone.
Mm. While can you put the mic right in front of you, Norma? Let's.
While they were driving, but it was accidental. It wasn't, you know.
As was this. Yeah.
And the day that they killed that person, they also died also. Because one of them killed himself. He shot himself because he couldn't deal with the
being, this is someone you knew committed suicide because he killed somebody by accident.
You guys know him.
Oh my goodness.
He used to work for the Community Action Agency.
Oh my goodness.
He killed himself. And the other one, she just died about 2 years after because they just couldn't deal inside anymore. Carrying, you know,
and that brings back
the emotion.
That brings back to the point of, like you said, you know, this guy, he knew it was, you know, it was going down. This, he knew all of this, and you ask about the time. Then that's someone with a conscience. Someone without a conscience would have been in Florida because of all of this time frame. You know, you got something out there on it. Yeah, they got it on me, all of this. Mm-hmm. So my point is, we need to work on speeding up this process.
Well, there's been a big problem. The Register had some very good articles about Chief Medical Examiner and how overlocked they, I mean, like remember all the time with the guy with the body parts severed and how long it took to get information back on that?
But they never did find a cause for it.
But although they had a suspect.
Guy, by the way, I went to school with that guy.
Who got chopped up?
Ray Roberson?
Yeah, I was about to say, but that just means they're probably still working on it and still trying to get back all the evidence.
They've had a suspect from early on.
Yeah, they've had a suspect since.
But once again, you know, here it is. It's that time, this time frame, this backlog, you know. There goes that 200,000 that's over there at the voter registrar that they don't know what to do with.
I love how you bring it back. Joe Ugly brings it back. You know what Norma says, when I drive, I always say there, but for the grace of God. I mean, I don't drive that often. I'm not that great a driver. I always think, oh my God, what if I killed somebody?
You always ride a bike.
Yeah, but I was thinking, what if you? I agree with Norma. If you ever accidentally kill somebody, boy, how do you live with that?
Right. I mean, it's harsh.
Two people die in that. That's interesting what Norma said.
I mean, if somebody even get injured by something I've done like that, I don't know. I can't carry that. I'll be in debt for them for the rest of my life.
Well, let's at least say they're new. You can't undo it, but let's at least thank the New Haven Police Department for working so hard and so skillfully.
Absolutely.
To solve that case. Way to go, folks.
Way to go, New Haven PD.
Well, thank you for joining us today in Dateline New Haven. Thanks to the best pundits around. Babs Rawls, Ivy, Marquisha Ricks, Norma Rodriguez Reyes, Harry Joseph, Joe Ugly, who when he's up on the 25th floor at his 360 State Tower, does not like hearing the police go to emergencies. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. So book it and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.